your next great vacation might be something you've never even considered. A private yacht in a beautiful location just for you and your closest friends and family. Explore the beaches of the Virgin Islands, the ancient shores of Greece, or the tropical paradise of Tahiti. This is not a cruise. This is a yacht charter vacation with The Moorings. And it's easier than you think. With hundreds of award-winning yachts to choose from, located in over 20 beautiful sailing destinations, the world is in your hands. Whether you're an experienced boater or looking for a more genuine once-in-a-lifetime vacation, The Moorings can make your dream a reality. Call us today and start your journey to your next great escape. Your private yacht awaits at moorings.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Their description, are they grimacing a lot? Are they scowling a lot? Are they peering a lot? Are they...
Sure.
I would say for you, you're more of a scowler.
Oh, yeah.
If I was writing Richard's character, I'd go, he scowled at Aust as the...
I have resting scowl face. I know.
Scowled, peered. I would never say he gleefully skipped. That's not a Richard thing.
I used to be a skipper. Da, 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 da.
Welcome back, everybody, to another Two to Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm the other host, Richard.
And today we're doing a little series that...
A little bit of a series. I'm happy to actually do this one to maybe clarify some things.
Yeah, because we're going over how to craft the perfect character, what we think, and also what authors think. We're going to talk about what authors say, how do you craft the perfect character, our thoughts on it, and giving a kind of rule of thumb and just basing what we, when we like to look at books, we're trying to see, what makes a good plot, a character, a world, prose, emotion, what makes it something a good message. And this episode, we're just going to go straight into characters, talk everything characters, and the difference between what are you actually going for in your book? Are you going for a static or dynamic? And I guess I'll start the conversation there.
Sure.
Because there's a couple different types.
Basically three-ish broad types of characters. There's your dynamic character, your static character, and then ultimately your tertiary character that's off to the side.
That would be main character, side character, like secondary, then tertiary. Because your main side character or tertiary character could all be dynamic or static. You know, so yeah, sure. The scale is like, you know, there's dynamic and static characters, which defining those is dynamic characters just have an arc. A dynamic character means you start in one place, you end in a different place, you learn something, or maybe it was a tragedy and you went the evil route, but whatever happened, you're not the person you once were.
Basically, there's a character arc where a static character is one that is not fundamentally changed by the story that's going on.
Yeah, you're James Bond.
James Bond, yeah.
Superman, usually. Depends on the adaptation for Superman.
Usually.
James Bond's a safe one. You're a static character.
Thanks.
Look at episode one to now. Still rich. It means you haven't lost yourself to the mob. You're still yourself.
It's that, or I have refused to take the call to action of my own character journey.
I think it's honorable. And it's you had your character arc before recording this pod.
That's sad.
But yeah, to distinguish the static character and dynamic versus where you were getting at, there's the main side and tertiary. That's just how important the character is. The main characters who we're following, the main guy, the main girl, the protagonist of the story, there's a couple protagonists of the story in an epic fantasy.
Side character typically is in service to a main character, either making the plot move forward for the main character or showing the main character a different side of themselves or showing them the lesson,
yes,
whatever have you, but they are not there for themselves. They're there to serve a different purpose.
Sam to your Frodo.
Exactly.
And a great example of a static character, just to show there, when we're talking about how to craft a perfect character, whether you're going for dynamic or static, there's different ways to do them. Mm-hmm. And a static character like Gandalf.
Yeah.
Gandalf is a pure static character. He's there for world building, for plot, intrigue, message. He's there for all that good, juicy stuff.
By the way, people typing in the comments talking like, Gandalf changes. He goes from Gandalf the Grey to Gandalf the White. Is that really a fundamental character change? No.
Rich,
no, it isn't.
You know, you're all right sometimes. You're defending me to the future commenters. Thanks for being on my side, bud.
You're welcome. I do my best.
Little character arc today.
Sometimes.
you might prove to be dynamic by the end of this episode.
Holding that over me, huh?
So, yeah, then you have another, just using Lord of the Rings as a big example, then Bilbo is, okay, at least in The Hobbit, is a dynamic character.
Yes.
And not in Lord of the Rings, he's kind of done. It's not his story in Lord of the Rings, but Bilbo, your main protagonist, just getting across that point of what the different characters are. Because when we're looking at characters and how to craft a perfect one, the one thing people will hear all the time is when you're looking for a dynamic character, let's put static character aside. Let's mm-hmm. tackle that next. But what we think of, and we'll have author explanations as well that I have ready to go here. See what, of course, someone like Sanderson, Emma Wang, I have Neil Gaiman and Rick Riordan. All I found out they had exact character advice, and that'll intertwine with what we're saying here. Now, for dynamic character advice, you'll usually hear the words flaws, wants, and needs.
That is the basic bare bones of basically any dynamic character.
Yeah, you have a flaw, and that flaw... So here's a great example. We had a friend of ours. We beta read a lot of books, and a friend of one of our best friends, he's awesome, mm-hmm. and he wrote a book with a main character who he said one of the main character's flaws was being physically weak.
Yeah.
But the character arc for the character had nothing to do with them being physically weak. It was a character arc about love, or whatever the concept was. It was not about strength. So it's important that, hey, if your character's weak or if your character's this or that, that's not the flaw that this rule's talking about. A mm-hmm. flaw directly inhibits what they need to learn. So physical weakness would be a lesson for someone. Rocky's maybe not the best example. Rocky's more, he's determined. He has to work harder than everybody else in the room to get there. But yeah. Physical weakness would work for a story of a lesson where someone needs to learn strength and discipline. Not for sure. Somebody that needs to learn how to love, or not for somebody that needs to do this, because it has nothing to do with what they need to learn.
And in that case, their weakness would not be strength. It would be discipline or hard work.
Yeah.
Basically, that's their weakness, is they can't do it. And eventually they learn that, and the byproduct is strength. Typically, strength is not a character weakness one way or the other.
Yeah.
So, but that's dealing with character, not war. Strength could maybe be a plot issue. The character's not strong enough. So the plot is the character becoming stronger. But that's not a character flaw.
Right. What would you say, using the one everyone knows, because we don't want to go into stories some people don't know, but Bilbo.
Sure.
Bilbo starts off, it's a very simple character arc. It's yeah. it's a more of a children's story, but also timeless, mm-hmm. but starts off with a very simple note.
I mean, Bilbo being afraid to leave home.
Yeah.
Afraid of the unknown, mm-hmm. basically.
And he needs to learn how to go on an adventure of his own and learn and have friends and not just be in the shy. So it comes out of his small flaw there.
Basically, how to come out of your shell. And there's a bunch of things on just overcoming cowardice, being overcoming greed. A lot of it is the reason why I love Bilbo a lot is not just a dynamic character, but in many ways has some static elements to him that he changes other characters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very fun mix of he also affects other characters. The stuff that he has right, his
yeah.
positive yeah, yeah, yeah. qualities affect other characters, and he changes them.
Right.
And the fact that him being a hobbit, being able to turn down the dragon's horde and turn down that greed, really taught
Thorin
a great lesson.
Yeah.
And same thing for the elves and everyone else. And that's a really fun dynamic. You don't have to be all in one camp. You can have a little bit of both and play with it. But yes. These are typically the character traits that you have to pick and choose.
Right, which is where you get to your more gray characters, your anti-hero characters. Because if we're talking about an arc where they do and they learn something good, but they had mm-hmm. good qualities, the way to just make your character more gray is, okay, they have an arc, but maybe it's a more murky arc, or maybe their personalities are... you can lean into how evil you want your characters to be. Some people, George R. R. Martin, would make his characters very gray.
Yet the lesson they learn along the way doesn't have to be a morally good lesson. They can learn the wrong lesson very easily. Or, I mean, again, a gray character doesn't need to be dynamic.
Mm.
You can have... there's so many different options, but what would you actually say to this? Because I think there are some characters which go along the tragedy route, where it is set up like a dynamic character where the character clearly has an arc, but ultimately fails and goes back to square one.
Mm.
So full circle, almost cyclical. Changes and then reverts back to how they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So they ultimately didn't change, but they tried to.
Right.
Where would you put that between like a static and a dynamic character?
I would say it's going with the... I don't know how correct this is. This is my reaction, is that it's going for dynamic. Mm-hmm. So the characters having changed, they have their flaws, wants, needs, and it's kind of like a failed redemption or a failure to achieve your arc. But static character, when I think static character, it's very much they're there for other reasons than following their character journey. So Gandalf, as in pure static characters, you're not there to see Gandalf fail to redeem himself or redeem himself. Whereas a dynamic character, you would look for whether they fail or succeed in their arc, there's still a trajectory. Static character, it's just pure line. If we're doing a graph, Austin, editing Austin, don't do this, adds more work. But imagine a line, right? Static character is constantly this, there for plot or world building, and the dynamic character could have their arc go, ooh, and then back down to the start, or their arc could just be exponential. Get the point. The line's moving, at least. That's what I think.
Sure.
Do you agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Because... yeah, a failed character arc is still a character arc at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Versus your, I don't know.
Perito from Puss in Boots 2.
Perito, great static character.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Often, I think the static characters give you... I mean, this is one of the lessons in some of the more basic books on plot structure.
Yeah, yeah.
That often the character who has flaws, wants, and needs, very early on in the book... or in the story, there will be a side character that will basically tell the main character the ultimate lesson. So the character wants X, but they really need Y. And a side character will actually basically show them that actually you need Y. The character says, no, I need X, and therefore goes on the journey. Yeah. Like the reason why we have a story is because they didn't take the advice or they didn't believe the side character in the first place to teach that lesson.
Exactly right.
Puss in Boots 2, great lesson of Perito from the beginning, basically tells Puss what
he's the solution to Puss's problem. Yeah,
exactly. He's the solution, but Puss doesn't listen to him, doesn't believe it, because Puss still needs to go on the journey,
honestly,
the story.
So I know that's DreamWorks, but Pixar is a perfect example of just look at quick character that teaches the other character a lesson is in so many Pixar films. They have it down to a science. That's why so many of them connect.
I mean, Wall-E, I think, teaches... like, Wall-E is the main character, but also the lesson teacher for everyone else.
Mm.
Like, Eva learns from Wall-E. The humans learn from Wall-E.
We learn from Wall-E. Thank you, Wall-E.
What a great story.
What a fantastic movie.
Up, where you have the kid teaches the old man a lesson.
Yep.
Frequently, this kind of goes through. So, all of this is to say dynamic characters are great. And in all honesty, most of your stories, if you're looking for an interesting character... often you want a dynamic character. I think it's easier to tell a story for an interesting character if they're dynamic. It's really hard, I think, to have an interesting character who's static. It can be done. It's just difficult.
I think something with the static character that it is very difficult, because if they're one note and flat, you need to have something where that character seems irreplaceable.
Mm-hmm.
Where... you can't put any other character in this role. Whether there's a lot of just funny comic relief characters, but when Rich and I, this is some insight into how we write things, when we're rating our character scale, we use the word irreplaceable on the top end, and on the bottom end, the one stars are incoherent characters. Like, we don't understand them, they don't make sense. And then somewhere in the middle of that rating scale is, okay, they're somewhat replaceable, but they're unique enough. They're in between that. But when we're looking for the top characters, we're going, okay, could any other character fill this role, or does it have to be this person? So Gandalf, I can't imagine any other wizard, even, because he has such a great character voice. It's his interactions, and all characters are. Dynamic or static are action, reaction, action, reaction. And you give a static character enough action, reactions to where you deeply understand them. That's how you get connected to that static character.
Now, a funny thing about Gandalf particularly, because I think many other people would maybe disagree with you, of like, now Gandalf is seen as like just the wizard. Like, it's the Gandalf sub in. You know what I mean?
Of the mentor.
You could sub Gandalf into a lot of other different people's stories. So very much like, so someone's saying like, oh, I don't think Gandalf is that unique. I've read so many different Gandalf-like characters.
Mentors, wizards, yeah.
The old wizard mentor. I mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi is your Star Wars Gandalf.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I think it's more to say about the other stories that are a copy, a variant of Lord of the Rings versus, like, yes, Gandalf could replace many other wizard, old wizard type characters. I don't think those characters could replace Gandalf. I don't think it works the same way.
I agree. And that's where you get a great static character, or because we're not even really touching on villains here too, because there's a whole other way of villains can work in a lot of ways where they're static. And some, I mean, most villains are static.
Generally
speaking, and they're there to be an obstacle for protagonist or obstacle for our main cast.
In many ways, does the same thing that a static side character that is teaching the main character the correct lesson. Often the villain is a static character to basically teach the main character the wrong lesson. And so it's the ideologies against each other. So you see the villain is... What could go wrong? What could the ideology you're up against? And then the main character ultimately has to learn the lesson to defeat that ideology. So it'd be very hard for the villain to be... So basically, the villain is a lesson to learn, but the opposite of your... the opposite of the correct answer.
Yeah, and exactly talking about how we were going, the flaws inhibit the need, and the want is what the character thinks they want, but they actually need this. The whole story you were saying of, no, the character rejects what that side character is saying this is the right lesson, but they need to learn this. The fourth element that includes villains and heroes and static and dynamic characters all comes down to, I think, motivation. I want to caveat that with, you don't need to go into a villain and understand exactly why they work. Sometimes it's just big bad. What I mean by motivation is sometimes a lack of motivation where a psychotic killer, and I've used this example in the past of No Country for Old Men's Anton, or Hannibal Lecter's psychopath in Silence of the Lambs, or any villain like that is there to be a threat and a monster and just, ooh.
Yeah.
Homelander from the Boys. Now, they're...
A little different, but main thing is the unknown is scary.
Yeah.
When you deeply understand something, it's a lot harder to be scared about it.
Yeah.
That's why it's always, like, in monster movies, it's always, the scariest part is when they're still in the shadows and they're still, like, you don't know what they actually look like versus...
Their point is fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
Whereas, so, motivations excluding those cases where it's there for the purpose of creating fear, creating whatever it is. Motivations behind your flaws, wants, and needs. So not just going, okay, I'm putting these character wants, or your static character. This goes into a great point that Brandon Sanderson makes when he is giving advice for how to create the perfect character. He says exactly this, and this is why I'm getting that motivation point behind flaws, wants, needs. So Sanderson says, Sanderson was asked, how can he write so many characters yet each of them feels three-dimensional and fully realized. And Sanderson, he admitted that he struggled early on in his work, but what he learned in the process of writing was stop writing people to an archetype and start writing them to a motivation. So for instance, instead of saying this character is a wise mentor, therefore they do wise mentor things, Sanderson would give them a backstory that drives them, such as this character lost their previous protege. They delved too far and their previous protege mimicked them and got themselves killed. So now the mentor is extra hesitant to ever train someone in that degree again. And that's the difference between motivation and archetype. So, hey, if you're looking at this example Sanderson's saying where he has a mentor character that is hesitant with teaching the new one, you would see that as an archetype. Oh, I've seen the archetype of a mentor who's been hesitant. But as soon as you link that to, oh, the previous one died, you understand them. And then you go, okay, I get this character. I now know when they have future action reactions, I know how I think they would respond. Because the whole thing where people are looking for in characters is when the book closes, Can I imagine having a conversation? Can I imagine them living their own life? Can I imagine that character and what they would do in all these situations? That's how they feel real, because you and I, Rich, no. I could imagine what you do in situations.
Yeah. Same to you. I'll keep quiet on what you would do.
for your
sake.
For my sake, thank you.
For your sake of privacy.
Don't let them know yet.
I won't let them know.
Would you agree with all that?
Yeah, exactly. And the more little details of that motivation, the more complex they will seem and more unique they will come out. Where an archetype is where, like, you can very easily predict everything that, like, if you could very easily predict from one instance everything that they would do, it's kind of a simple character. Versus there's some degree of complexity of, it's kind of my thought of it. There are some people out there where you learn one opinion about someone and you know all their opinions.
Oh, yeah.
And you just kind of like, you look at them a bit like, it's disappointing. And it's kind of, it feels predictable. The person can feel like an archetype. If you learn one thing, then you know everything. Mm. Versus a more interesting person is you learn one opinion and you can't predict everything else. Not really, because they have complexity of thought. Same thing with characters. If you, from the first page, you basically know everything about them and how they respond to all things, it's like, oh, okay, simple character, because I can very easily predict it. Versus a character where you're understanding them, but there's details of, oh, they react, I wouldn't have predicted that, but now that I know the information, I do. That kind of complexity of action, reaction to scenarios, what makes a character complex. And irreplaceable.
Because here's the point to that. Because in a story, characters are put in situations that us in everyday life aren't. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I have a full understanding of how you'd react in situations. I think the beautiful thing about stories is then, well, how would Rich act under...
For some, the sea is not a place. It is a calling. A home away from home. If you find yourself drawn to the water, we can take you there. Imagine you, your friends, and family on a private yacht in the most beautiful places in the world. From the Bahamas or the Virgin Islands to Greece, Italy, Tahiti, and beyond. This is a yacht charter vacation with the Moorings, and it's easier than you think. Inquire today. Your next great vacation begins at moorings.com.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
How would he act in war? Like, how would you act when guns pointed at your head, you're haul-assing in the middle of no man's land, and how would you react there? I would have an idea. I'll go, I think, Rich, but then you've never been stuck. You could believe you would be heroic, but then what would your conviction be?
We had that conversation a while ago on beliefs versus convictions of, and I know this is not an actual definition. It's just kind of an internal definition for how I think of it.
Yeah.
Is you can have a lot of beliefs, and beliefs are things you've thought out and you believe. A conviction is a belief that's been tested. I believe, and personally, and again, this is a belief, that there's many things that you can never know until you've actually been tested. There's opinions that you can hold, or it's like, example, I've never been to war. I can maybe believe how I would react if I was put in certain situations.
Hmm.
Ultimately, though, I know that I'll never know.
Right.
I'll never know unless I'm actually tested. I may say, I may believe, oh, I would react this way. You don't know until it actually happens. And that would be the conviction. And I think that's the fun thing with a book. Mm-hmm. Is it's that you get to the beliefs, mm-hmm. but then the story unfolds and shows a conviction.
Because I think that combines our points, because I'm going at the fully realizing and understanding what a character would do, but you're talking about the point of, okay, but then put them in this spot. And what would they really do? And what would their true colors really show?
Actually, that's ML Wang's character building.
Yeah,
her. I really loved her advice on how she built characters. Do you want to give it out?
Absolutely. So ML Wang wrote Sword of Kaigen. I think she is
fantastic book.
Masterclass at writing characters. If you have not read that book, read that book, and or at least listen to this advice from her, not our mouths. She puts her characters in three different situations. I won't go into detail into paragraphs and paragraphs, but here's the three main situations. It's the three Ds: the day at work, the detractor, and the dragon. And all that means is the day at work is how would your character, she asks a bunch of questions of what would your character do in a day-to-day normal situation.
Mm-hmm.
What would they do at work? What would they spend their time doing, eating? What kind of food would they, the really generic stuff. And then the detractor is, well, now put them into a debate. How would they, are they aggressive in an argument? Are they more reserved? How would, in a stressful situation, mm-hmm. how would they handle themselves when being confronted with someone that disagrees with them? And then the third is the dragon. And the dragon, she uses this as a scenario with some huge climax of a story where there's a literal dragon. How would they deal with that war situation you're talking about?
Yeah.
Their actual convictions. So you believe their day at work is like this. People on camera here listening can believe we're friends outside this podcast.
They can believe that.
But they, until if they see it outside the podcast...
Yep, our friendship is only a belief. There's no conviction in it. But to simplify ML Wang's point, it's basically you're seeing the character's baseline, then their belief, and then their conviction. So how are they on day-to-day level where they're not challenged? And then how are they challenged? How do they respond to – what do they believe and how do they respond?
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly is, let's put that belief to the test and actually show.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where some fun character stuff is a character can believe one thing, then ultimately do another. I don't know if this is, I don't think this is completely spoilery, but I do want to bring up something with basically two separate characters. One is Matt Coffin from The Wheel of Time. What I really enjoy about his character, what's really fun, is his beliefs and his convictions are opposites.
Mm.
He believes one thing in his own head about himself. He sees himself as one type of individual, as a selfish, wheeling and dealing, just kind of sleazeball who's ultimately not out there for other people. And he's there for himself. His conviction, when he's given the opportunity, when he's faced with that type of scenario.
I'm going to help Egwene.
Yes. Yeah. Every he always chooses to help out his friends and help out the other person at great personal sacrifice. But he never acknowledges that. He is completely divorced from his actual convictions, which makes him just so much fun to read. I enjoy that a lot. The same thing with...
Can I give an example we both know as well?
Yeah, go ahead.
Dungeon Crawl Carl.
Yeah.
Carl's a very small example of this, where he's this gruff man,
mm-hmm.
and no spoilers on this, trust me, this is very, very light intro of the book, but Carl's this very gruff man who says, oh, this stupid princess cat that gets his girlfriend's cat, who's called Princess Donut, gets pampered and all this glamour. He just hates it, and he's just kind of gruffing on that side. But his convictions are he loves that damn cat.
Yeah.
He sticks around that cat. Oh, it's such a cute cat.
Yeah.
Small, cuter example, but did you have another one to bring up?
Yeah, I was going to bring up First Law Trilogy, yeah. Sandan Glockta. When you get to it, I'm not going to go into really many details, mm-hmm. but what makes that character so interesting is that push and pull between beliefs and convictions.
Awesome.
Constantly where the character may think they know themselves,
right,
but they actually don't. And so are they a worse person than they believe they are? Or are they a better person than they believe they are? I think that says so much about a character and where you can really dig into them and you can really connect and love a character. And it's kind of endearing when a character believes they're worse than they actually are. And you're kind of rooting for them. You're Kaladin. Believes is much worse than he actually is. And part of his depression where you're like, ah, come on, Kaladin.
Come on,
Kaladin. And that's an enjoyable part of a character.
Absolutely. And that I didn't think of it that way with Emma Wang and breaking it, how it's just your normal baseline, then your beliefs, then getting tested with your conviction. That it seems to be exactly what she's saying. Day at work, the detractor, the dragon. Those three steps in a character. And so from Sanderson, from Emma Wang, I'm going to go on the Rick Riordan's thoughts as well. But just to break down, Sanderson is looking at motivations. Mm-hmm. And getting down to why does a character function the way they function. Of course, we talked earlier about there's exceptions to rules. Just take this as a general rule of thumb. And Emma Wang's is doing baseline belief, conviction. And then I have Rick Riordan's point of view. And he has five big tips that he advises. And this is coming from the perspective of more of a YA middle grade author. Rick Riordan, he wrote Percy Jackson. He wrote everything to do with Percy Jackson. So I think he has a series in Egypt, a series in...
I know the Egypt one, I don't think it's actually connected, but it's...
He's also written that, yeah.
It's Percy Jackson, but Egyptian gods.
Yes.
What it is.
He does a lot of cool mythology. We loved Percy Jackson growing up, but
yeah.
Here's his basic advice. He has five rules, and the first is define a character first through action, second through dialogue, and then third through description, never through explanation. So just making it so you're not explaining this is how they work. The general show, don't tell, but he's saying action, and I want to focus on that action part of all books are repeating action, reaction. That's how we get to deeply understand a character. So what do they actually do? And he's saying second, dialogue, and then third, description. So what are they actually doing? What are they actually saying? How are they actually physically reacting as well? Their description, are they grimacing a lot? Are they scowling a lot? Are they peering a lot? Are they...
Sure.
I would say for you, you're more of a scowler.
Oh, yeah.
If I was writing Richard's character, I'd go, he scowled at Ost as the...
I have resting scowl face. I know.
Scowled, peered. I would never see he gleefully skipped. That's not a Richard thing.
I used to be a skipper.
No way.
Oh, I love skipping.
Oh,
skipping's great. It's a great way to get around town. Great way to stay in shape.
I would pay to see you skip today. That's our next merch drop.
Oh, yeah. Just us skipping. Yeah.
Yes. Then his next piece of advice is be an impressionist rather than a realist. And he's saying that describe characters as Dickens did, with a single deft stroke, a laundry list of physical traits is realistic, but it's not memorable or compelling. A jarring metaphor for the character or focus on one mannerism or physical trait can be very compelling. And an example he puts is, she was a human tornado. You know, instead of going a bunch of things, like she jittered around and jumped and skipped and left and crawled and did, just a human tornado, gives a metaphor across and gets a kind of memorable, clicks in your head, descriptive trait to that character.
A lot of that is just trying to be more efficient with your writing. With a larger vocabulary, you can get across more complex ideas with less words, generally, versus if you don't have a incredibly large vocabulary. If you're not Shakespeare, Shakespeare just said, like, hey, the English language is not strong enough for me. I'm going to have to create more words to fit my genius. English cannot contain me. And, you know, he made words. But another shortcut to that is metaphors. Metaphors are far more descriptive with less words in Pug because reader can then imagine and add more words in their head that you didn't have to say.
Exactly. And Neil Gaiman's advice on that, this is his snippet. He says, when you have a lot of characters wandering around, you need to help your reader. And one of the ways that I've always liked to do that is what I call funny hats. You give your character something that makes that character different from every other character in the book. So make sure that when somebody comes on, they don't look like anyone else and they don't sound like anyone else.
Yeah.
Prime example, Harry Potter.
Yeah, very good. Very good.
I know nothing. You could know nothing else other than he has a scar.
Scar. It's lightning the boy scar. With a scar. Hermione. Frizzle hair. Just crazy hair. Ron. The ginger. Just the outrageous ginger.
Richard.
That's all he is.
Who's Richard?
Was bald man, but I'm not the hair back. I'm going to have to find something else.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I'm
Richard the Harry Potter glasses.
Yes, you got
those are straight out of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I do like my Harry Potter glasses.
They're nice. They're nice. Yeah. Austin the squirrel got a very squirrel like demeanor. You know, I'm always biting around.
You are a little bit.
I was hoping you would push back on that.
No. Slight difference.
Yeah.
Chipmunk. I imagine you more as the chipmunk.
Okay.
Not the squirrel.
I imagine you as a big cuddly bear.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
That could be taken a different way.
Which way? Oh. Oh. Rick Riordan's next point. Rick Riordan's next point is that do not be afraid to use real people as models, but do not be constricted by your models. I really like that advice, especially for newer authors too.
Sure.
That could be great advice. So he says, it's very natural to use parts of ourselves or people we know when creating characters. Don't be afraid to do this because someone might get mad at you, but at the same time, let your characters develop. Don't force them to be in that model. Mm-hmm. But using what we actually know helps. I mean, every creator out there, every story is just a conglomeration of what has happened in their life and other stories they've read.
Yeah. Comes back to our kind of AI idea of, I think AI eventually will get to the same place as humans, or at least really close, because what humans do is absorb information and experiences from their own lives and the things they've already read and basically reinterpret it into a new fresh story. AI basically does the same, just more rudimentary process, but larger data set.
I guess we've had our AI debates on here,
but
I do disagree with you, but not, I don't 100% disagree with you. I do disagree. We've talked about it several times. So go watch our other podcast episodes on AI debates. We've done it several times.
Yes.
I think if you guys want to see, we did it on the Sanderson and Daniel Green. They had 10 warnings for authors or whatever it was for publishers. And then we also talked about it with Brian Lee Durfee. And then some other podcast episode.
Yeah.
But if you want a detailed conversation there, go there. But that whole model point with Rick Riordan is great, because if I was to craft a character and I take a little recipe from here, a little recipe from there, all stories are doing is rudimentarily, right? Right? That's...
I'm just going to let you stew in your ignorance.
Those who throw stones. So, yeah, combine two stories where it's just, okay, here's this idea creates new idea.
Yeah.
Now, this next advice from him is the reader does not have to be told everything you know about the character. Show, don't tell, of course.
Yeah.
And then the very last one is your character must act, not simply be acted upon. Where he says we care about characters because we're interested in the choices they make. We want to boo the villain, cheer the hero, cry with frustration when the tragic figure makes the wrong move. Character who does not act, but simply receives information and is acted upon by outside forces, is not a character who will compel the reader.
That's a general case of that's probably the much easier path. You can have a character that is just reacting and not actually acting upon the story. It's your more static character where they're not really changing. That's just constant. But that is, you have to have a really fascinating plot, a fascinating world, an interesting message for that to really work. And even then, kind of difficult. Especially if that's your main character, much easier for that to be your side character.
Yeah, I would even go one layer, and it's exactly what you're saying, where, hey, if they're only being acted upon, even if they're being acted upon, they can react to that being acted upon. It's more so passive versus an active character. If you have a passive character that just literally doesn't react to the new stimulus, mm-hmm. Even if you're a static character, you should still react to if you're acted upon. Because you have main protagonist, Liza Locke Lamora is an example of this. Is a character who the world's way beyond him, not giving spoilers for this, just the world's above him. He's not a magic user. You know that very early on. And although the plot's kind of happening to him, everything happens to Locke Lamora, but he reacts to being acted upon.
Sure. Yeah, he actually makes decisions that affect the story.
It would not be a fun story if everything's happening to him and you're just, oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. To that same degree, that's why I didn't like Rogue One as much as other people did. Like, in hindsight, it's probably the best Star Wars movie that Disney made, but I think that's a really low bar. But ultimately, your main character is entirely reactive. It just constantly dragged around to places and plopped into scenarios and ultimately doesn't make a decision until the very final third. And that decision is a pretty obvious one. It's not a really hard or complex decision of, oh, actually, we probably need to go get the plans, the Death Star. Like, yeah, duh. Of course you do. But all throughout that entire story, completely passive character. And it's why I thought it was pretty boring on my side. So
I don't remember the movie as well.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether I'm going to assume your opinion for now.
Yeah. Nice contrary. Everyone seems to like Rogue One. I'm just going to put it out there that no, it sucks. It's terrible. Awful. No good. Very bad.
If you want to yell at Richard,
kind of like it.
Do you actually like it?
It's fine.
Okay.
Mainly the ticket price was worth the Darth Vader scene.
Darth Vader scene's top tier.
Top tier. It's all I needed. I could have just walked into the theater, watched that scene, left.
Done.
And I would have been very happy with my purchase.
Well, if someone disagrees with you, how can they yell at you directly?
Hey, they can actually yell at me directly, like either in voice chat or in a text channel on our exclusive Discord.
Wow.
You want to click the link in the description for our Patreon? You can join us for our monthly book club. We actually have other community book clubs going on at the same time. Ton of fun, and you get to yell at me directly about Rogue One and other things.
our book clubs, we like to look at characters, I mean, with all of our book reviews, mm-hmm. and I'm curious, what are your top, if you could say your top three characters from books? Just we're talking the talk on what makes a great character.
Sure.
Who are your favorites?
Hard, but Misaki from, in no particular order, not an actual ranking, but just the top three.
Mm-hmm.
Misaki from the Sword of Kaigen.
Yep.
I would also put Randall Thor from the Wheel of Time.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't gotten to why I love him so
much.
I understand.
Trust, I know.
It's a slow...
I have no way reason to yell at you for that when I have not read 10 of the books. So,
but Randall Thor from Wheel of Time. And probably third, I'm tempted to say Dalinar Colan or... something like Glockta from First Law Trilogy.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Probably up there.
You're getting excited for that.
Somewhere in there, those are my top three characters.
Awesome.
So ask me on a different day.
It's different, yeah.
You may find different answers.
I would go Misaki from Sword of Kaigen, Takaru from Sword of Kaigen, Mamoru from Sword of Kaigen.
All Sword of Kaigen.
She's a genius. But actually, I would probably say Misaki's definitely... Dalinar.
Yeah.
And then, man, the third, it depends how you ask.
You want to give it to your boy, Darrow?
Depends on the book. I'll give it to Peak Darrow, but other times there's hills and valleys.
Actually, recent thing, I'm at the tail end of Demon in White.
Ooh.
I'll put in my top three Hadrian Marlowe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. He really turns around, doesn't he?
Oh, he does.
Okay.
Fascinating character.
That's awesome.
Really good. I'm enjoying it.
Oh, yeah. Well, Rich, this whole breakdown, what do you think the most important things to stand out from this character discussion of what makes a great character? Is it the action reactions, flaws, wants, needs, motivations? What else?
All of these are important, but ultimately it's show, don't tell is probably the biggest one. But it comes from history. You kind of know what has happened to them. And once you start building up a database, really, of actions and reactions for a character, and then you extrapolate further upon that, that's basically a character. Ultimately, if you can come up with a character, and then you come up with different scenarios of how they reacted to certain things, maybe you're not even putting those into the actual story, but from there, you tell the rest of your story, I think you'll probably have a decent character.
That's what we think about characters. Yep. Let us know what you think down below. And we're going to go into plots, world building, all the things that we think make up a great novel.
Yep.
In the future.
I'm excited for all those.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.